Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dhena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah.
It's such a pleasure to be with all of you. Such a rare opportunity for all of us to come together to hear and chant. Hearing and chanting, Shravanakirtan, is the essence of spiritual life. It's nice to know what the essence of spiritual life is. In fact, there are many instructions all over the world because it's the natural impetus of humans to reach towards the divine. And therefore, everywhere we go, we hear spiritual instruction. But those who are primarily interested with giving the greatest advantage to the people in general compile those instructions into books, and they make them available in human society, and they make beautiful books all over the world, the Bible, the Quran. People have expanded on the teachings of other kinds of saints and sages around the world. And all of them have some value for us in human life to remind us of our prime duty. When we come to the Bhagavad Gita, we find a book which has concise and very exacting instructions given by the Supreme Personality of God himself, and therefore it is of particular value and interest to those who want, vitally want, spiritual life quickly and as soon as possible in a progressive way. And then there's the Srimad Bhagavatam. And even with all these teachings, it's often difficult to discern what are the most important teachings. So we find that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu often essentialized these things. When he taught Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, he told how there are 64 items of devotional service, and out of them, there are five which are particularly important. And then out of those five, he said, one completes them all, and that's the chanting of the holy names. And that's something that's universal. It goes beyond class and culture. Everyone, everywhere, can take part in the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra and get spiritual advancement. Or, as Prabhupada used to teach, any bona fide name of God you can sing, and you will make profound advancement in spiritual life. So we'll sing the Hare Krishna mantra, preceded by some pranam prayers. And then I have a presentation tonight called Bhakti Lessons from the World Around Us. And we'll also talk about some down-to-earth tips for making progress in... What is the name of the seminar?
Personal growth.
Personal growth. That's always of interest. Okay, personal growth. Down-to-earth tips for personal growth. Right? Okay. And are we online? We welcome everyone, all our online participants, all the great devotees who have joined us from around the internet. This is a rare opportunity. Who knew this would be possible? Even 5, 10 years ago, or maybe 10, 15 years ago, to stay connected in this way through the internet, which is a kind of a mystic power. So thank you for taking advantage of this, and we're glad you joined us tonight.
Well, cultivation is such an important concept because there's a miracle in nature. And if you create the right environment, then wonderful things can grow. In California, near where I live, there's a project by the state or federal government to repopulate certain endangered species of life. I see it sometimes when I go hiking. There are pools, and they have reeds growing up around them, and they're fenced so that people can't come in and interfere. And this is known as habitat, in a general sense. When you create the right habitat, then the particular species that is used to that habitat will grow. And so there's a way to cultivate our lives in such a way that we'll get very certain results. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna goes into much detail about the three modes of material nature and what you can expect from living in certain ways. That's our participation in the scheme. That is, there are ways in which we can act in the mode of ignorance, in the mode of passion, in the mode of goodness. And it's also certain that we are agents for change, and that is that we can determine the ways in which we live and therefore how we're affected by various modes of material nature. So this is a very exciting concept, to be an agent for change, agent of change also, and that we can decide what we want, and through cultivation we can change and we can bring in new ideas and new growth. So cultivation means also receptivity, particularly. I like this particular verb, Prabhupada uses it. And the definition in the dictionary, able or willing to accept something. Able or willing, isn't that interesting? Sometimes when you speak to people, there's such a subtlety in language that one might say, are you able to do this? That's one thing, right? Managers, back me up on this. Another thing you might say, are you willing to do it? What do you mean, am I willing to do it? Are you able and willing to do it? These two words together, very important. You may be able to do something, but are you willing to do it? This has to do with your receptivity. And according to our capacity to receive, there are unlimited gifts floating free within this world. Within our own heart, we have the Master living. The Master who's teaching us everything, the inner guide, who's always there 24 hours a day, never lazy, always attentive. But how receptive am I to his instructions? In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Tesham satata yuktanam, bhajatam priti purvakam, dadami puti yogam tam, yenamam upayanti te. It's very subtle. Moods and tones of voice are so subtle. Or sound vibration carries our consciousness. Those of you who live with someone else, you may say something just right, at least the words are right, and they might say, I don't like your tone of voice. You ever hear that? I don't like your tone of voice. Well, you said the right words, just the tone of voice wasn't right. So much is carried by our mood. And there's a very subtle mood of devotion within the heart, of our receptivity. When Krishna perceives even a tiny bit, an atom worth of receptivity on my part, then he is willing at every second to respond, because Krishna is responsive. Everyone please say, Krishna is responsive. That's the beauty of bhakti. Krishna is responsive. He's not a dead stone, and neither are we. And the relationship, responsive relationship we have is beyond the three modes of material nature and can be accessed simply by a change in our own receptivity. What is our receiving capacity? So there's a science behind receptivity, how to cultivate it, how to increase one's receptivity. Open your heart to Krishna's grace and mercy. That sounds like a good occupation, doesn't it? Rather than worrying about so many problems in life. Does anybody have any problems in life? Or is it just me? Is it nonstop? Pretty much, right? It never stops. There's a realm in which those things take place. It's a realm of consciousness. Just as in the Gayatri Mantra, there's a description of various realms. And within those realms, you can expect a certain kind of result, a certain way of moving. We happen to be right now in a realm called Durgadham. Durgadham comes from the word Durgachiti, which means difficult to go. It's hard to move around here, relatively hard compared to other places. And we can move to other realms of consciousness. In fact, this is the great boon of life. If you don't like where you are, change your consciousness. Because it doesn't matter where you go. If your consciousness is the same, you'll get the same result. So you have to open your heart to Krishna's grace and mercy. So there are several ways to do that. One is through humility. This is the topmost way to developing humility. This is recommended by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter, where he describes the path to knowledge. And he says, Amanidvam adambitvam ahimsa shantirarjavam. He starts with humility. So it all starts with humility because it means I have a need. And when you have a need, a sincere need within the heart, then Krishna has a response for you. And if your need's not so much, then he has nowhere to put his grace. He has nowhere to put his mercy. If you put a stone in water, how much will it absorb? But if you put a ball of cotton in water, it'll immediately absorb the water. So according to the receptivity of my heart, the humility, the need that I feel for Krishna's grace and mercy, I will receive a proportionate amount. A service attitude, one who has a service attitude is welcome everywhere. Isn't that true? And those who have an attitude of exploitation, they're wanted nowhere. So developing a service attitude means that we'll never be disappointed because there's always service to do. You can do service anywhere you go. It's open at any time. If you're very much eager to do service. Whereas if I'm looking for the world to meet my needs, I'll be sorely disappointed, especially if you fly United Airlines. Because they just don't care anymore. Don't get me started. Next is submission. Prabhupada mentions submission in the Bhagavatam, that simply by the act of submission, one can come to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. These do not require an advanced degree in Sanskrit or physics or anything else. They simply require adjusting one's consciousness and make one completely receptive to the grace and mercy of the Lord and sincerity. What is sincerity? That's a great science. One should look into that. Try to find it. Somebody wants to know where to buy sandalwood oil. That's also a great science, because most of the sandalwood oil is cut with something else. Even olive oil is cut with something else. Hard to find good olive oil, isn't it? Connoisseurs? Anyone? Connoisseur of olive oil? Nobody here? I'm from California. Got it, huh? Ghee. Yeah, there's one. Ghee. Hard to find good ghee. Reports come out. Ghee is mixed with all kinds of other things. Who knows who mixing with? You want to find the perfect pure ghee, you have to do a real search to find it. Find that pure substance. You may have to go right to the source. Sincerity also. How to find that pure sincerity within one's heart. That's the great search. Look for it. In fact, when chanting, one should be searching. Where is that one drop of sincerity? Hard to find sometimes. Yes, or is it just me? But even the search for it brings out happiness. That I'm Krishna looking just for that one drop of sincerity. I don't know where it is, but it is the most valuable substance in the world. If you go to India looking for sandalwood oil, you can search around and find various grades. But if you want good oil, you go to Chandichok in Old Delhi and go to Gulab Singh, right? Mother Subhuti knows Gulab Singh, little hole in the wall. He's got the best oils from all over the world. You can pay $20,000 for a tiny little vial of musk, and People who make perfumes, they come to Chandichok, they buy from him these rare essential oils from around the world. But if you go to Mr. Singh and you say, I want one little bottle of sincerity, can he deliver? Please just give me one drop. I will give you $1 million for a drop of pure sincerity. Will he deliver? He cannot. At least not that I know of. It is the most valuable substance in the universe, actually, that one drop of sincerity. And if one can find it within one's own heart, then it opens one to the grace and mercy of Krishna. Now, in practical terms, we have to engage our senses. This is part of cultivation. Rupa Goswami, the great master of devotional service, has taught that devotional service is a cultivation. Therefore, he uses in his foundational mantra describing devotional service and the word anushilanam, the verb shil, which means to cultivate. Practically, it means to engage the senses in a certain kind of practice and also the mind. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes that there's a way in which the devotee is like a gardener. And the practical application of this cultivation or using the senses in a certain way comes to its perfect application in the Shravanadi Jal. So Jal means water and Shravanadi means hearing and chanting and the other processes of devotional service. But they all begin with hearing and chanting. So this is the foundation of our lives. One very important point is that we run on ideas. We move in the world because of the ideas that we've already taken in to our mind and heart. They're like seeds. And the search for good ideas is one of the practical tips for improving one's life, finding good ideas and implanting them in one's mind and heart. So in down-to-earth principles for personal growth, I'm listing number one, search out great ideas. Search out great ideas. What is an idea? Here's the definition from the dictionary. A thought or suggestion as to a possible course of action. A thought or suggestion as to a possible course of action. And as to how these ideas act as seeds, I'm going to read a very short passage from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, from the Madhya Lila, 19th chapter, text number 152, for those of you who are keeping score out there. Bhakti Lata Bija means the seed of devotional service. Everything has an original cause or seed. For any idea, program, plan, or device, there is first of all the contemplation of the plan, and that is called the bija, or seed. The methods, rules, and regulations by which one is perfectly trained in devotional service constitute the bhakti lata bija, or seed of devotional service. What we expose ourselves to will determine the direction we go in our life. And the more we can take in good ideas, the more we'll be directed in the right way, how to move our tongue, how to move our eyes. When it comes to the decision that we have to make, which thing will I choose? That cultivation of good ideas will come to play. One who does not expose himself to good ideas. In fact, it's possible to expose oneself to bad ideas, isn't it? Altogether possible? How you do that? Bad association. Well, give me some more specific examples. How might one do that? Get bad association really quick. Turn on the television? That's a way to get bad association really fast. How about the radio? Or, I mean, it depends, of course, where you tune in, but 99.999% of the time, you tune in and you'll hear bad ideas, misconceived ideas, speculative ideas, ideas that are not based in any goal towards achieving perfection in life and so forth. And if one takes those in at the time of making a decision, one looks at the world and has to make a decision this way or that way. If you have bad ideas, if you're infested with them, you'll make the wrong choices. And when you consistently do that, what happens? What do you think? What happens when you consistently make bad choices? What? Develop bad character. Anything else? Yes? Becomes a habit? You suffer like a wounded dog. If you see a dog, sometimes they get severely wounded, walking around in the cold and wet and rain. That's where you make bad choices. You end up like suffering like a wounded dog. So make good choices. Now, where do you get good ideas? Fortunately, there's a reservoir of good ideas that you can take every day. You can just drink them in. First place is from the Shastra, from the scripture. It's just good ideas, one page after another, one word after another, one line after another, a bunch of good ideas piled one on top of the other from the greatest, not just the greatest thinkers, but the most compassionate souls who are freed from the modes of material nature and have only one interest, and that is your benefit in life, you achieving the highest goal in life. That's all they're thinking about. And they compile it, they put it in one place, and they say, here, please drink from this. So one of the great tips for advancing, practical tips for advancing in life, is to read. Not all readers are leaders, but all leaders are readers. Books are the ideal place to find good ideas. If you study the Shastra carefully, study the scriptures regularly, you'll know what to do. And you won't be confused by perplexing situations. And how often do perplexing situations come up when you are managing a restaurant, Mother Praharana? Well, that lots is very general. Approximately how many times in a day? Once? Twice? 100 times? Three or four times a day. If you're in construction, it comes up more, apparently due to extensive research, there are more decisions to make in construction than any other endeavor in life. This was told to me by my contractor, who kept coming to me and saying, do you want the red tile or green? Because we're out of blue. At every step. I thought we had the blueprint, but everything gets changed and the price goes up by double. Then you have to decide, do I want to live on peanut butter or have a nice kitchen? So many perplexing situations, but if you study the Shastra, if you take in these good ideas regularly, then your mind becomes fortified and you're able to decide how to move forward in life in a very practical way. So don't deprive yourself. Another is to listen. Learn how to listen. It's a rare art, listening. What does it mean? To give one's attention to a sound, to be alert and ready to hear something. I'll say it again, because maybe you weren't listening. To give one's attention to a sound, to be alert or ready to hear something. And I wasn't just being glib when I said that. It's a fact that it's hard to listen unless you intentionally do it. When you're talking, for instance, let's say if you have a spouse and you're having a conversation, it's altogether possible to have the sound vibration hit you, to go in the ear, but not to comprehend. Why? Because I wasn't listening. Or you could be, even I've experienced reading a book, and I'm thinking about, I forgot to pay my taxes last year. That's not true, because Nirkula probably took care of it. But, right? You did, right? But I could be reading a paragraph, and I could be thinking, I'd like to take a trip down the Amazon River. I could be anywhere else besides in the paragraph that I'm reading at that particular time. Any conversation, any lecture. So it's actually a treat to the mind, to the soul, to come to listen carefully with that intention. And I'm going to listen very carefully. The ears are such fine-tuned instruments. They pick up sounds from all over the place. But listening means I point them in a certain direction. I don't let anything else in. And this is called rapt attention. Prabhupada mentions it in his purport at the end of the third chapter of the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that one must hear the scriptures with rapt attention. You know that word rapt, it comes from the word rapture. Rapture. Something's rapturous. It grabs you. It pulls you in. So one must learn to hear with rapt attention. It means one has to learn the art of listening. Oftentimes, when someone else is speaking, I'm thinking. When they stop talking, I'm going to counteract what they just said with something better than what they just said. This is a tendency of the mind, rather than to listen attentively with an open mind. The quote that I mentioned, O learned Brahmanas, when Shukadeva Goswami recited Bhagavatam there in the presence of Emperor Prikshit, I heard him with rapt attention, and thus by his mercy I learned the Bhagavatam from that great and powerful sage. Now I shall try to make you hear the very same thing as I learned it from him and as I have realized it. Purport. One can certainly see directly the presence of Lord Sri Krishna in the pages of the Bhagavatam if one has heard it from a self-realized soul like Shukadeva Goswami. One cannot, however, learn Bhagavatam from a bogus hired reciter whose aim in life is to earn some money out of such recitation and employ the earning in sex indulgence. No one can learn Srimad Bhagavatam as associated with the persons engaged in sex life. That is the secret of learning Bhagavatam. No one can learn Bhagavatam from one who interprets the text by his mundane scholarship. One has to learn Bhagavatam from the representative of Shukadeva Goswami and no one else, if one at all wants to see Lord Sri Krishna in the pages. That is the process, and there is no alternative. Is everyone listening? Yeah? Okay, it gets thicker. Sutta Goswami is a bona fide representative of Shukadeva Goswami because he wants to present the message which he received from the great learned Brahmana. Shukadeva Goswami presented Bhagavatam as he heard it from his great father, and so also Sutta Goswami is presenting Bhagavatam as he heard it from Shukadeva Goswami. Simple hearing is not all. One must realize the text with proper attention. The word navishta means that Sutta Goswami drank the juice of Bhagavatam through his ears. That is the real process of receiving Bhagavatam. One should hear with rapt attention from the real person, and then he can at once realize the presence of Lord Krishna in every page. The secret of knowing Bhagavatam is mentioned here. No one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. No one can be pure in mind who is not pure in action. No one can be pure in action who is not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. But somehow or other, if someone hears with rapt attention from the right person at the very beginning, one can assuredly see Lord Krishna in person in the pages of the Bhagavatam. Did you enjoy that? Which part did you like? And do we have the extra microphone? Yeah. Just any comments, anything that stuck in your mind. Interesting about this, I was in India for the Kartik season, more particularly I was at Govardhan Hill. And there's an ashram called the Bhaktivedanta Ashram, where my dear friend Keshava Bharati Das Goswami presides, and every year we gather in a room there that can hold about 20 people maximum. And we hear from various scriptures every day through the Kartik season. About 5 hours a day, we come into that room and just hear steadily. And we notice that just by the process of sitting and hearing, then the sound vibration very powerfully affects everyone and everyone's consciousness. And it takes a little bit of practice to sit there for that long and actually listen. But those who do it give remarks like it was life-changing and so forth. But my point is that when we'll read one day, sometimes, or one session, and then we break for some time, when we come back, we'll say, what did we read in the last session? And sometimes it takes people a few minutes to remember, and then someone will say one point, and then the other points will come in. Anyway, what did you hear? One thing that you heard that stuck in your mind. We'll just take a couple. Yes, Krishnadas Kaviraj Prabhu. Push the bottom, I think. You say I'll repeat until he gets it.
In order to hear the message of the Bhagavatam, one must be pure in mind.
In order to hear the message of Bhagavatam, one must be pure in mind.
And one cannot be pure in mind unless one is pure in action.
And one cannot be pure in mind unless one is pure in action. Thank you. To share the Bhagavatam from a realized perspective, as opposed to earning an income from the Bhagavatam. That is, one should hear from someone who's purely presenting and not concerned with earning an income from reciting the Bhagavatam. One more? Yes. Hearing the Bhagavatam with rapt attention can lead one to be pure in mind. Go ahead.
Lead to pure in action.
Pure in action. That leads to be pure in action. Thank you very much. Okay. So hearing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended hearing in the association of like-minded devotees who are more advanced than oneself. Think you could find anybody like that? Search out. Go find someone who's interested in hearing, who's hearing and chanting all the time, who's more advanced than yourself, and sign up. Say, where can I sign up? I'd like to sign up. I always compare these, you know, you can go to festivals and there are all kinds of large sanghas, but in the back room somewhere there's a, of course, those sanghas in themselves, there's advanced devotees and hearing chanting going on, but in the interim, oftentimes, there's a hearing and chanting sessions going on in the back somewhere in powerful ways. For instance, you know, in Vrindavan sometimes you can walk around and talk to everybody that you see all day long. Festivals, people come up and go, hey, how you doing? You still living down there in California? Yeah, how's everything, you know? And over again, you can talk about the same thing, or you can sit down and read Krishna book. And to do that, you have to have a little solitude, find a place. I always think of it like some people are addicted to gambling. And when they get to town, you know, they pull into Cleveland, Ohio, and they say, okay, where's the game going on? There's always a game in the back room. gambling's illegal. So they have it in the back room. You know, there's all the intense gamblers going on back there. So there's always a intense hearing and chanting session going on somewhere. So you should be addicted to hearing and chanting enough to want to know, where's the game going on? Tell me where the real game... I want somebody to deal me in, and someone's got to like, all right, it's in the back, but I got to go ask Louis first if you can come in. See, all right, let him in. If you can get in there, if you can get in that game, be dealt in that game, you're very fortunate. Try to find that. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying. And also in the Bhagavatam, it's mentioned the holes of the ears are like the sky. There's a very small opening, apparently, but inside it's as large as the sky. Don't worry that it's going to fill up. Don't think that I got enough now. I heard it once, that's okay. Keep hearing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, keep hearing. So it goes from the ear to the heart. And the Bhagavatam says, Rit Karna, from the heart, from the ear to the heart, from the Karna to the Rit. And there's a transformation. This is how the transformation of consciousness practically takes place. If you take in the spiritual sound vibration through the ear, it will go into your heart. One day walking in my neighborhood, this is a picture from my neighborhood of a storm drain. They're all over the place. I live in the Bay Area. That means near the San Francisco Bay, but not that near. We're 20 miles away. Well, I didn't know that. Anyway, all over the Bay Area, even 20 miles away from the San Francisco Bay, there are these storm drains, and they have a little emblem on them that say, no dumping drains to bay. No dumping drains to bay. Because all the water that goes in there ends up in the San Francisco Bay, because water seeks its own level. That's the big repository of all the water. And if you throw in Roundup and motor oil and everything like that, that goes in the San Francisco Bay. And do people do it? Yeah, all the time. They just think, oh, I'll just pour this out. And the next thing, the rain comes, it washes it down the drain. It's in the San Francisco Bay. It's in there. And studies show it becomes more and more polluted. The life inside the ocean, their cells get filled up with these toxins and so forth. It spreads through the ecosystem. So I was contemplating how these storm drains are just like my ears. Little storm drains on the side of my head. And there should be a little emblem right here on each side. It says, no dumping drains to bay. Because remember, whatever you dump in here, it ends in the bay in your heart. And the heart is what directs us. The body is the chariot, and the heart is the driver. And you're going to go with your heart. Follow your heart. And your heart will be in a certain state according to what you hear. It's a science. It's practical. You can direct your life. You can go in a different direction. In fact, you can go all the way to Goloka Vrindavan just by hearing. It's the highest spiritual planet. But how do you get there? Not by a ticket, but by hearing. If you hear about Goloka Vrindavan from the right source, if you find that game where people are talking about Krishna constantly, then your heart will be transformed. In fact, even before leaving this planet, you'll be walking around, but at the same time, you'll be connected to Goloka Vrindavan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, it's like the growth of a little creeper. It gets watered in the heart, and it pops out through the coverings of the universe, which are vast. It goes past the demarcation of the material and spiritual world called the Viraja. Then it goes through the Brahmajyoti, past the Vaikuntha planets, all the way to the Goloka Vrindavan planet. There it finds Krishna and entwines itself, that is the creeper, around the lotus feet of Krishna. And the person who's addicted to hearing gradually comes to this point of being a dual citizen. They say, let's see your passport. Okay, you're Canadian. But you know, actually, I'm connected to Krishna because you have connected yourself through this transcendental process of hearing and chanting. And this is what's recommended in all the shastras. Stane stita shutigatam tanuvan manobir. Whatever situation you are in now, don't panic. It's all, there's a remedy. You can't artificially change your position. You can try to change from one place to another. As I said earlier, this place is called Durga. Not so easy. You can't just move from one place to another, can you? Change from one job to another? Change from one identity to another? Very difficult to move in this world, but you can change everything and reconnect with Krishna through the process of hearing, become completely liberated. So there's different kinds of hearing in this world. One is called the mantra effect, and the other is called homing. I mean, I say it is called, that's what I call them. The mantra effect, I'm referring to a section in the Ramayana. At the very beginning of the Ramayana, or near the beginning, there's this momentous occasion that Ram is going to be inaugurated as the king regent. Dasarath is giving up his kingdom. He recognizes Ram as the most qualified son. Everyone loves Ram. Everyone's singing and dancing in the streets because Ram, the next day, is going to be inaugurated as the king regent. And only one person is not happy about it, and that's Kaikeyi, Kaikeyi's servant, Mantara. Kaikeyi is one of the wives of Dasarath, faithful wife, whose son is Bharat, but she loves her stepson, co-son, equally. With all her heart, she loves Ram. And then her servant, Mantara, who's a very envious person, who has a vested interest, who realizes that if Ram is inaugurated and not Bharat, the son of Kaikeyi, then maybe I'll lose some stature in the kingdom. Maybe I'll lose something. And out of envy, she approaches Kaikeyi, who's celebrating with everyone else, and begins to speak to her in envious tones, saying, "Don't you know what's going to happen if Ram is inaugurated? Why are you so happy?" And Kaikeyi is resistant and argues against her, but Mantara persists out of her intense sense of envy. And gradually, the mind of Kaikeyi is changed. And then her heart also becomes envious. And she goes along with the dastardly plan of Mantara to ban Ram from the kingdom, calling in the boons that she had received from her husband Dasarath many, many years before. Ram will be sent to the forest. Her son Bharat will be installed on the throne. And all this happened within a short amount of time. And this can happen to anyone through bad association. If you listen to criticism of devotees, you'll lose your appreciating capacity for them. You may not immediately be affected externally, but internally, you'll look at the person in a different way and you'll think, "Oh, I can't appreciate him anymore." And you lose the great ability to appreciate the Vaishnavas, which is so essential to advancement in devotional service. So don't listen to envious criticism. Don't hang around with Mantara, because if you let her whisper in your ear, then you will be affected. And there are lots of mantras in the world. Be careful to stay away from them. Homing means that by hearing the sound that comes from Goloka, Golokera Premadhana Harinama Sankirtana, one can find one's way back home, back to Godhead. I like to give this example of the salmon who live in the streams in California. Especially one day I was walking with two devotees from Hungary, showing him Mir Woods, which is one of the last redwood forests with old growth redwoods in California. And we saw the ranger with these long tongs, and he was wearing wading boots, and he was standing in the stream that runs through the forest, and he was pulling little pieces of something out of the water. So we went over to talk to him and asked him what he was doing, and he showed us that he was collecting little pieces of trash and also coins. And he called it micro trash. There's lots of micro trash in the world, little pieces of everything that come off of everywhere. And also people, they come to this pristine place and they make a wish and they throw coins in the water and so forth. So he said, why is it so important? And he said, because it disturbs the salmon, who are a central part of the ecology there. And then he described to us how the Kehoe salmon are born in this, the streams of fresh water. And then after they grow a little while, their body starts to change and they are compelled to go to the ocean. So they swim all the way down the stream, all the way to the ocean. And they swim in the ocean for several years, sometimes going thousands of miles. And then at a certain point, they come all the way back to the exact same stream that they came from. They find their way back. And then they swim upstream all the way to the exact same pond that they were born in. And then they mate, they have offspring, and then they die, and then their offspring do the same thing. And the reason the ranger said that he was pulling the micro trash out of the water is because one of the ways that the fish find their way back there is through their sense of smell. It's so acute that they can smell their same stream from hundreds of miles away. And they can find their way back all the way to that pond. And when one throws a Wrigley's gum wrapper in the water, it disturbs their ability to do that. Even coins do. So we were talking, that is, the devotees I was with, and thinking how profound this is, their sense of smell, that they can find their way home. And then we were thinking how the scriptures tell us that we have a similar power in the human form of life, that through our sense of hearing, we can find our way all the way back to our original home, the spiritual world, through the sense of hearing. So you have to use this homing device. You can find your way all the way back to Goloka Vrindavan, but you have to hear the sound of the spiritual world. And if you hear that sound regularly, it will bring you back. And don't interfere with that sound, with other kinds of inferior sounds. Now, those who are gardeners know that you have to regularly water your plants, especially in the summer when you're away. And for that, there's a drip system. This particular drip system that I was made was invented in Israel, and it's particularly efficient. It has little tubes with a tiny nozzle on the end that regulates exactly how much water will go to each plant. And throughout the garden, although it takes some time to set up, there's a great benefit from doing this, because once it's set up and you put the little nozzle on each plant, then each one of them, when you turn on the central system, will get the right amount of water every day and every week. So in the same way, one should set up a regular system for hearing about Krishna in one's life, a regular system, so that it happens every day without fail. And one must hear for a long time. How long should one hear for? You got to be a little more like dramatic about it. How long? Thank you. How long does it take? A long time. The Supreme Personality of God had said, one can get liberation by seriously discharging devotional service unto me, and thereby hearing for a long time about me or from me, by thus executing one's prescribed duties, there will be no reaction and one will be freed from the contamination of matter. I always attracted this verse because sometimes people ask, how long does it take? And now if anybody asks you that question, you'll say,
long time.
My godbrother Chiru said, when Prabhupada was visiting Australia in 1970, and he had an opportunity to talk to him alone, privately, he asked Prabhupada, how long does it take to achieve perfection in chanting Hare Krishna? And Prabhupada didn't say a long time. He said 40 years. 40 years is what? A long time. 40 years of regularly chanting, of hearing with rapt attention, high quality hearing and chanting. Might as well start now, right? At any time, one can start this. It's also this law of large numbers that I was attracted to, which says that the results obtained from a large number of trials should be close to its expected value and tend to become closer as more trials are performed. This is the law of large numbers. Those who are mathematicians, yes? Law of large numbers. Any math majors out there, mathematicians, accountants, anybody know this law? What do you call it? Sample size must be large. The larger the sample size, the more accurate the statistics are, right? So there's a way in which one may chant Hare Krishna for a year or two or a couple of times. Your results may not be forthcoming, but if you give it a larger sample size and continue to chant, and get some large numbers in. Get as many opportunities as you can to chant a lot, to hear and chant as much as you can. You're going to increase dramatically the results that you get from the process of hearing and chanting. So hear a lot. How much should you hear? And how long does it take? And how much should you hear? A lot. And how long does it take? So if anybody meets you after this seminar and says, what was it about? You could say, it takes a long time. And you got to chant a lot. So we should look in our lives for teachable moments. Teachable moments are very rare. What is a teachable moment? An unplanned opportunity that arises and which gives one insight. Someone may only get one teachable moment in a whole lifespan. But the Srimad Bhagavatam says, one moment of full consciousness is better than a life of ignorance, long life of ignorance. It's inconsequential, a life of ignorance. No matter how successful one may seem in this material world, it doesn't really count for anything. But if you have one teachable moment, that time in which you're completely receptive due to one thing or another. Anybody here ever had a teachable moment? Yes? Last night, okay. Anyone else? Yes? Teachable moments? They come sometimes unsought. You may have a near-death experience. You may suddenly lose someone who's very dear to you. Those may, sometimes when things are taken away, one sees the situation, the world, the way it really is, one's fragile existence in this world and so forth, one may have a teachable moment suddenly. Take advantage of these teachable moments and try to live in these moments. Try to create more teachable moments to be receptive to Krishna and to hearing and chanting. So here's a watering schedule for my yard. We have a front and backyard and raised beds where we grow vegetables. And this is the device that you hook in all those tubes to. And then once you set up the device and you turn it on, it automatically sends water to all those little plants. The ferns get a little extra. During the summertime, the tomato plants get a lot extra. During the wintertime, everything's turned down. So there's a way in which to regulate everything. So it's recommended in the Shastra, in the scriptures, one should have this automatic system for keeping the vibration of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and the Srimad Bhagavatam especially, these going in one's life regularly every day. Nashra prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. Nityam bhagavata sevaya means what? Means constantly. or at least every day. Just thinking about how you have to start over every day, because the material world has an enervating effect. There's a way in which our courage is taken away, the wind is knocked out of us, as the old saying goes. At every step, people are saying things or things are happening to us which are discouraging. Does this sound familiar? Or is it just me? Therefore, you have to constantly, at least every day, regularly start over. Don't think, I've been doing this for so many years, why aren't I getting the result? And reinvent yourself every morning. Start over. And have this regular program that you start your morning, you start your day by hearing and chanting, and stay on that schedule. Prabhupada called it, get practiced automatically. Get practiced automatically. And Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita recommends abhyasa yoga yuktena, that you should practice. Abhyasa means to do something over and over and over again until you get it. So here's a few practical steps. CHAD stands for chapter a day. One very highly recommended practice is to chant one chapter of Bhagavad Gita every day. You can do just the English, or you can do just the Sanskrit, or you can do the Sanskrit and the English. And if you do it every day, without fail, you'll become a great scholar. You'll feel invigorated. You'll make right decisions. Your life will be happier. You'll be able to control your tongue. You'll be able to control all your senses, where you look, how you think. Everything will become clear, and all by the grace of the words which emanate from the lotus mouth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How long does it take? About a long time. No, it doesn't. This one takes 5 to 10 minutes. 5 to 10 minutes. Chapter 15, how many verses are in chapter 15? How about chapter 12? Two of the most popular chapters in this. Because sometimes people are busy, and it is seemingly insurmountable, the mind that says, oh, you don't have time for that. It is not time, it's taste. It's not about time, it's about taste. And how do you get taste? You have to try regularly to do this. So if you chant one chapter of Bhagavad Gita a day, which will take you maximum 5 or 10 minutes, out of all the precious time, I may have time for everything else, but when it comes to the Bhagavad Gita, the mind say, nope, sorry, I don't have time. You dirty little rat. You did everything else today. You give me 10 minutes now. Chad, take Chad as a regular way to take the transcendental sound vibration. There's nothing better than the Bhagavad Gita. Nothing better in this world than Bhagavad Gita. And many people have Bhagavad Gita. Many people say they have Bhagavad Gita. Many people say they know Bhagavad Gita. But hardly anybody reads Bhagavad Gita. Hardly anybody knows Bhagavad Gita. Be the one who actually knows it. Be the one who actually reads it every day. And all it takes is 5 or 10 minutes to read the Bhagavad Gita every day. Chad. Page by page, be a sage. We have a little chart that shows how many pages a day you have to read of each one of Prabhupada's books to finish it within a certain amount of time. And if you don't have a plan of when you're going to finish each book, you're not seriously reading Prabhupada's books. And Prabhupada says in his purports in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that if you don't read every one of his books, you'll get interested in eating, sleeping, and everything else, and you'll fall down from the path of devotional service. So have a plan to read every one of the books. And so if someone asks you, when are you going to finish the Bhagavatam this year, you should have an answer. For instance, did you know that if you read just 41 pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam every day, you will finish the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, 12 cantos, in 1 year. If you say, that's too much, how about 8 pages a day? You will finish the entire Srimad Bhagavatam in 5 years. And you know what? You're going to be 5 years older in 5 years anyway, hopefully. And if you add this to your life, 8 pages a day, you will have taken in that pure sound vibration of the Srimad Bhagavatam and Srila Prabhupada's purports within 5 years. be on a schedule. Have this automatic watering system going regularly. Ekadashi is the mother of devotion for those who respect her. Plan for Ekadashis. Plan your life around Ekadashi. Find out when they're coming. And take advantage of Ekadashi to the best of your ability by using that day to increase your hearing and chanting. It's a great opportunity. There are times in every day. There are times in every month. There are times in every year, and there's a time, special time in one's lifespan, which one must take special advantage. The time every day one should take special advantage is Brahma Muhurta. That's the time when Nordstrom, do you have those up here? What do you have? Everyone blank stares. What's the big store up here, the big department store that sells all the stuff? Huh? Nobody shops anymore. The Bay. The Bay is having a 95% off sale today only, and you go the next day. Not very good. Brahma Muhurta, 95% off. Free nectar flowing through the environment. Come and get it now. And you go at a different time. Not very good. You're not going to end up with a big bank balance investing like that. Be a smart investor in spiritual life. Take it when it's coming free. Take it when it's being poured down. There's a time in every day to get that Brahma Muhurta. There's a time in every month. That is Ekadashi. Take advantage of Ekadashi. It's the mother of devotion for those who respect her. The time in every year? Kartik. It's the most advantageous time to focus on Kartik. Forget everything else. Make a plan for Kartik, how I will increase my hearing and chanting, my dedication to my service, and so forth. Reinvent yourself on the Kartik month. Think ahead, plan for it. It takes a whole year to plan for the Kartik, to be ready to take full advantage of it. And then there are holy days. How many holy days are there approximately? So many in Vaishnavism, you can't even count them. If you have one of those little reminder things on your calendar that pops up on your screen, every day they'll be popping up. Oh, did you know it's the appearance day, disappearance day, special movement of the sun? Everything's got a special occasion. Pick out some of those and make those particularly prominent in your life. Take advantage of these holy days. In fact, that could be a great excuse in your life. Sorry, I can't come today because it's the appearance day of Rasi Kananda Prabhu and so forth. And, you know, it gives you a good way to transfer your energies from the material world to the spiritual. So there are dry spells in the bhakti garden, doubtless. There's times in which it's very difficult to even move, even to pick up one's bead bag. And there may be times you find yourself in another place where you may not have the kind of association you want, like any place you can think of? It can't be Newfoundland because there's a devotee we met from there today. Where were you going to say? Basic training where? In the army. Yeah, basic training in the army may be a tough place. You may find yourself there someday. Where else? Hospital. And I met some, there's some devotees that were living in Middle Eastern countries where they you know, it becomes very, you have to be really careful. Of course, sometimes that can make it even more intense and they take advantage of it. But there were some devotees living alone in these holy places. Well, maybe they are. In some of these places where it's very hard to get devotee association. You can't even express your devotion. You can't chant so forth. Anyway, there's many ways in which we may get dry spells in the bhakti garden. So take advantage of the rain when it comes. Take advantage of the rain when it comes. There's a way in which there are big festivals. There's times when you can really take advantage. Just like in California, we have a 1,200-year drought. It means we haven't had a drought like this in California for 1,200 years. It's biblical in proportion how severe the drought is in California right now. And just over the last couple of days, we have what is called the Pineapple Express, which is a river of water sent to us by our friends in Hawaii. And it is hanging over California, dropping inches of rain every day, sometimes 4 inches, sometimes 10 inches of rain, just buckets of rain that come down. And the reservoirs are starting to fill up. Not enough, according to experts, who are always in fear of losing everything. But the fact is that these things come unsought. You can't predict when the big rains are going to come. But when they do, go take advantage of it and fill up, because there will be times when you're going to be stranded somewhere and you don't have the opportunity. Also, in weeding the garden, be attentive to weeding the bhakti garden. And what should we do now? Continue? Okay, is it a silent artik? Okay. Is that okay with everybody? Or do you want to get up and have darshan, because that's usually what happens, and then continue afterwards? Advise us. Okay, when the doors open, we will stand up, offer obeisances, sit back down again, and then we'll continue, if that's okay, because there's a few more things to talk about. Is that okay? Shishi Gorni Dai Ki Jai. Shishi Radha Kir Chor Gopinath Ki Jai. Jai Jagannath Baladev Subhajaji Ki Jai. Govinda Jaya Jaya Gopala Jaya Jaya. Govinda Jaya Jaya Gopala Jaya Jaya. Radha Ramana Hari Govinda Jaya Jaya. Govinda Jaya Jaya Gopala Jaya Jaya. Govinda Jaya Jaya Gopala Jaya Jaya. Radha Ramana Hari Govinda Jaya Jaya. Are you ready for some more practical tips? Okay, here they are. I mentioned good ideas. And second major tip is to capture ideas. Make sure that you're ready to catch them when they come to you. Very practical way. You'll notice if you go to the Prabhupada Museum in Vrindavan, which is in his room. There's some glass cases. You'll see a little notebook about this big that's open to a page, and there's a pen next to it the Prabhupada used to use. He carried one like this, and he makes notations about ideas that he gets during the day, and you can see them listed there on the notebook. And Very frequently, ideas come to us at inopportune times. Or they come to us and I think, I'll catch it later. But it doesn't come back. If you simply become proactive in catching these, think, how many of these good ideas can I capture today? And find a way to store them and then revisit and process them. You'll increase your productivity in life dramatically. So most people just let them go by and they think, I'll get that later, or it doesn't matter. But be the one that captures them. Be ready to capture them. And there's lots of ways to do that. But don't be lazy about it, because oftentimes you never get another chance. Sometimes now, when senior devotees who have so much experience, over 40 years of chanting Hare Krishna, and even personal association or instruction from Prabhupada, they suddenly leave the world, and then I think, oh, why didn't I talk to them sooner? Recently, I've been talking to Brahmananda Prabhu in Vrindavan, because I'm asking him questions about various things in history for the book I'm writing. And as soon as I hang up the phone, I think, why have I waited so long to talk to him? And how many other important personalities are out there that I could be talking to and capturing the ideas that they put out and so forth. So, capturing ideas. Another is, number three, collect mentors. Collect mentors. What is a mentor? And a mentor is an experienced and trusted advisor. I tell you, you can't get enough of these experienced and trusted advisors in your life. And everyone has some expertise in some area. So everyone has some expertise. If you want to know about cooking, you go to somebody. Kanad was telling us today, he served us a beautiful feast. And he studied the science of how to buy quantities of things. He knows that. If I tried to figure it out on my own, it would take me a long time. But if I wanted to know something about that, I would go ask him. There are other devotees, they know something about something. People all over the world, actually, they specialize in certain things. And it's very important to find these mentors and stay in regular touch with them. You can expedite your advancement in devotional service by being in touch with mentors who are trusted and experienced, and draw from their experience rather than floundering or whimsically trying to do something you're not sure of. Take their advice. It's common advice that if you want to make a hard decision, you should consult several brahmanas first. And let this be your guide by collecting mentors. You can make a mentor's list. Any of you have a mentor's list in your pocket? Or at home? On your Rolodex? Does anybody know what a Rolodex is anymore? And then, keep a list of questions. Do you ever get questions you can't answer? All the time, right? In fact, one of the great results you can get from hearing and chanting sessions is that you come away with more questions than answers. Means you're hungry. You hear things that take you deeper into the science of Krishna consciousness, and you have a hunger to know about them. Now, if you collect the mentors list, you can line those questions up with the right person. Because certain people, they specialize in certain areas. They can answer certain questions for you about parts of the philosophy. They're just good at it. Like if you want to know anything about Jiva Goswami, who would you consult if you had a question about him? Who would be your mentor? Who? Who? Radhika Raman Prabhu. He's an expert in Jiva Goswami. He got his PhD thesis by writing about Jiva Goswami. He wrote several books about him. So if you want to know about the life and teachings of Jiva Goswami, the intricacies of his philosophy, he's one mentor you could approach. I have a little list on my computer, is mentors. And then if you open that file, you'll see a whole long list of files of different names of mentors that I've collected over the years. And each one of them, they specialize in certain areas of knowledge. And whenever you need something, the devotees, well, they're vancha kalpatarubhascha. They're like desire trees. You can go to these desire trees and ask them, please, fulfill my desire. Tell me what to do now. Give me some instruction. Is everyone okay? You're all right? On a scale of 1 to 10? 1 means you're ready to go. Where are you about? 10! Okay. 1 person's at 10, I'll keep going. So Krishna recommends this in the Gita. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they've seen the truth. So this is a recommended process, collecting mentors. Next tip is to learn how to reinvent yourself. Go over your priorities regularly. That means you have to know where you're going in life regularly, because life will jumble your priorities for you on a regular basis, and you have to revisit them and find out. Rick Warren, who started the Saddleback Church down in Southern California, a very beautiful Christian Baptist church, which is thousands and thousands of members, and they have a very enlightened way of teaching and inviting people in, very welcoming environment and so forth. In any case, he takes a lot of his guidance from the Bible, and he has a lot of experience in starting the Saddleback community. For over 20 years, they didn't have a place, and they've moved from one place to the next. Now it's a prospering community, so forth. One piece of advice he gives is that you regularly have to remember your mission and remind everybody around you what your mission is. He said at least every 30 days. Because within 30 days, it's enough time for you to forget what your mission in life is and for everyone else around you to start pulling you in different directions. In fact, as far as communities go, he says, unless you're community knows what the clear mission of your community is, they'll start pulling in different directions. So every 30 days at least, everyone should be refortified by remembering what is the mission. So in our personal lives, we should revisit regularly who we are, where we're going. At least once a year. This is a good time of year, right? We're coming to the end of the year. We'll be starting in January. It's dark outside, but the light starts coming back soon after the winter solstice, and new hope starts to come in. We can take this time now at the end of the year when things die down after the marathon and it's dark outside, nobody's doing anything anyway, most of the people in the world are disappointed because they didn't get what they wanted for Christmas or anything else around these... There are lots of things going on. They die down at that time. And you can take that time to retreat and reinvent yourself. Give yourself some time, some permission to reinvent yourself. Go back in, sit down, revisit. What were my priorities after all? What got me here in the first place? Why did I come to devotional service? What am I doing in my life? Look at everything. You can change if you want to. You can go in a different direction. You don't have to accept that I'm just stuck in the cycle, whatever cycle it is. Or if you like the way it's going, you can always pick out what's making it going right and improve it. Take time. Take a day. Take 3 days. Take a week if you're really bold. And if you have a spouse, significant other, then take them along with you. And go to a place where you can't be bothered. I also recommend, practical tip, everyone should buy themselves or make themselves a please do not disturb sign. It's very valuable, actually. I carry one with me wherever I go. And whenever I want to be alone and to actually think about something thoroughly, I'll put up the sign on the door. And then I put up another one inside my mind. Don't bother me right now. I'm thinking. It's very useful to think sometimes. Because oftentimes I'm simply reacting to my environment, all the cycles that are going on in my mind because of all the other things I've seen and heard throughout my life. And I don't really get time to think about what I really want. But here's another tip. Get yourself a legal pad of paper so you don't restrict in space. You're not restricted by space. Well, a little bit restricted, but it's a legal pad after all. And then a nice pen you can write with, and sit down with yourself. Put up your do not disturb sign, please do not disturb sign, on the door. Turn off anything that has an on-off switch that can disturb you. Turn it all off. You'll feel different after you do that. As soon as you turn everything off, your body lets go. You go, oh, okay. I feel a little better now, because you can't be assailed from any direction. And just with yourself, take your pen and sit down and think. And just start writing your ideas down and say, what do I want? Where do I want to go? What do I want to improve? What's worked well? What hasn't worked well? Put it all down on paper. And it's amazing what you can do with a simple piece of paper and a pen. And just some quietude and the permission to sit and write and listen to your own heart and what you need to have in your life. So it's amazing what can happen. You don't need an application. You don't have to have another app. And you don't need a new computer for this. You just need a piece of paper and a pen. Old-fashioned technology. And you can accomplish wonderful things. So number four is reinvent yourself. Number five in practical tips is you must exercise. Physical exercise is so important. It changes the chemistry of your body, actually. It gives you the ability to sit and listen. If you're unhealthy, if you feel pains in your body all the time unnecessarily, then it's very difficult to concentrate, to do the things that you need to do. So one of the best kinds of exercise, in fact, mentioned even by one of our acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary to the verse, yukta hara viharasya yukta cheshasya karmasu yukta swapnava bodhasya yoga bhavati dukaha, which is spoken by Lord Krishna, where he says you should have a balanced life. You should be balanced in the way you sleep. Don't sleep too much and don't sleep too little. Don't eat too much and don't eat too little. And you should recreate yourself so that you can live a balanced life. And in the commentary, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says walking is a recommended Vaishnav exercise. Anybody can walk. I mean, most people can walk. It doesn't require a lot of paraphernalia. You can just find a place to walk and do it every day. And you can start just by walking around the block if you're not used to it, and then extend it a little further, a little farther, and walk and get your heart moving. You got to exercise the heart. And other kinds of exercise, there are lots of them nowadays. No dearth of exercise available in the world. You don't have to go crazy with it. You don't have to, you know, spend all your time doing it. But Prabhupada every day religiously went for a morning walk, vigorously walked. And it was on the recommendation of a physician. He said that, you know, you need to walk to prolong your health, to maintain your health and to prolong your life. You need to walk every day swiftly for a certain amount of time. So everyone should have some regimen every day where they exercise. It's also good to drink lots of water, clean water, not sodas, not a lot of drinks, even juices and things like that have a lot of sugar in them and things. These are commonsensical things, but they're very important for health. And some basic health regimen on a regular daily basis. And a good diet means rainbow diet. Lots of different colors in your diet, fruits and vegetables and things like that. And not really cut down on sugar, because sugar, it basically, you know, we offer it to the deities and everything like that, but it doesn't mean that you have to eat tons and tons of it every day. You can eat honor prasadam, but not tons. You should have a healthy diet. You can live for a long time that way. So those are five tips for personal growth. What are they? Number one was search out great ideas. And subsection of those to find the good ideas was to read. Also learn to listen. Number two is to capture ideas. Find ways to capture them. Don't take it for granted that you're just going to remember everything you hear or see in the day, but write it down or record it somehow, because then you can process it later. Number three is to collect mentors. They're experts, experienced, who can advise you, experienced people who can advise you. Find them, collect them. Number four is to reinvent yourself. Take time every day if you can, or at least once a month, or at least once a year, to start over, decide what you want to do, who you are, what your goals are, and then go from there. Number five is to exercise. Take care of the robot, because the robot, although it takes care of itself pretty well, it doesn't like Coca-Cola. It wants water, not Coca-Cola. It wants vegetables, not sugar bombs, sugar puffs, and all kinds of things. You have to be smart, take care of your body, take care of the robot. It's a rare machine. It's the best thing we've been given is this body, this facility, so take good care of it. So five things, and now we'll take some reflections. Anything that you heard that's stuck in your mind that you want to repeat back? Zora, did you raise your hand? It's reflections. Anyone's open to anything that you heard that stuck in your mind, one point that was particularly meaningful to you that you heard that you want to repeat back. Keshava.
I really appreciated the storm drains that we have on the side of our head, and how if you do not be careful, you can have things that can enter the bay of the heart. So no dumping, drains to the bay.
Nice. In fact, one devotee was telling us how he almost drowned in the Ganges. And then when the devotee saved him, it was a miracle that he was saved and he had almost died. They said, "So what happened? Did you think of Krishna?" He goes, "No. I remembered a commercial from laundry soap." The most unlikely thing, you know, from his childhood, there was a song. And don't get me started, because I can remember them all. from my early days, it's just, you know, they're just in there. So be careful, because they stick, and it's a serious thing. The whole story of Bharat Maharaj is to impress upon us how serious the Prabhupada says, going back to God, it is not a plaything. So don't mess around. Don't dump. Yes?
And chat is very important. This is very noticeable, because sometimes I'm afraid, I'm lazy, I don't have enough time to finish everything in 1 month, 2 days, you know, I'm hurrying something. And I just go to IDEA with their schedule daily for 5 page, then 10 page, and continuous.
Yeah, that system is called Be a Sage, page by page. And I'll make available a little chart that you can look at, and we've already calculated all the pages. We're in the process of calculating all the shlokas in all the books too, so you can count on your electronic reader also, because it's hard to read pages for some reason on those devices. Yes, thank you. Excellent.
One thing that everything you said spoke to me, that's been super helpful, but the teachable moments. One thing you said is when hard times or difficulties strike, and you're more fragile, it's a great opportunity to use that to move more closer towards bhakti and more closer towards Krishna. And I find that to be very, very true and helpful, instead of trying to play.
Yeah, very nice point. Be ready for it. Louis Pasteur once said that great discoveries come only unto the prepared mind. And if you're ready for that, if you're ready for those things and they come to you, the instant they happen or the time frame, one may immediately react in another way, but then you can recollect yourself and say, okay, how can I really go deep with this opportunity? Nice.
I just remember the mantra effect.
The mantra effect, yes.
Yes. And to find a
thought to get away from it. And sometimes we are in a situation where we cannot actually confront so much. So we just have to move away, and just the thought is just chanting to take us away from that.
Yeah, and if all else fails, you can grab your cell phone like it just vibrated and say, oh, sorry, I just got a call, I got to go. Thank you. Arunda Keshavi? Or Vittal, I'm not sure who it was.
Actually, I was also going to say the mantra effect and also the homing, because when you're so, your mind is so cluttered with so many things, you don't get that signal. You cannot get the sense of where you're going.
Yeah.
And that really struggled quite with
me. Nice.
Both those.
Great. Thank you very much.
I liked a lot, but two that stuck were, I like the do not disturb sign, and also this put it in your mind. And, you know, to really make an effort to isolate, turn off everything. We have right now, we've got new phones, we have 6 phones. And there were 4 around where I sit and where I read. And we've got a text actually at a funny time. And all the phones went off. And I haven't been actually meditating or anything, but they're in the house now. They're right now. They're like one in the kitchen, one in the chair, one in the... But they happen to be surrounding at that time. So we just set it up. So, as you're saying, anything... And that means at any time. And the phone's really intrusive. You can be having a really intense discussion. The phone goes, oh, you got it, it's the phone. And I mean, I've seen it so many times. So that one.
Yep. It's actually, sometimes it feels painful to shut everything off, because what'll I do now? The mind, we may not even notice how addicted the mind becomes to various contraptions and ways of working in this world until we try to regulate it, and then it'll kick back. Thank you. Very good advice on both sides, the sign and the phones.
And also, both of the ears, like, open to the sky.
Yes.
I like that, because it's just nice vision, analogy. And also Chad, because we started once, but we lasted 2 or 3 days, and I've never, ever read enough. And when you do that, it's so nice. Why aren't I reading this every day? And this wasn't in this one, but one quote, one thing you said in another seminar related was, if you haven't read something, if you haven't read from Srila Prabhupada's books, it's like your whole day has been thrown into the gutter. And it just really struck me. It's like, oh, how many days am I throwing in the gutter? So anyway, I like Chad and Kaya.
Okay. Thank you very much. Not hard, Dave? Oh, did we miss somebody back here? I saw Narahari Dave with his hand up.
Two things that stuck to mind. One is about Chad. It's not about time, but it's about taste. I'm guilty because, you know, I keep chanting, but I try to be a member of Chad, but sometimes several days go by when I don't do it. And so that's something. And the way you were explaining about the benefits of, reciting a chapter a day, so that's very helpful. Second thing that really stuck to mind was the point about be a sage page by page, when you mentioned that if you don't have a plan of when you're going to finish reading Srila Prabhupada's books, then you're really not serious about reading Srila Prabhupada's books. So that really hit me. So one of the things is I will go back and make a plan for myself.
Get a legal pad of paper
and
a pen. Thank you very much. Nice points. Yes, Cresswell.
Yeah, it's the same thing about Chad. I went home this earlier today, and I said my body was feeling a little tired. I said, okay, I'm going to take a little rest. But then I decided to check my phone, and I just come across your seminar concerning procrastinating. And then I was listening to it for a while, and in the program you mentioned about the chapters, I wasn't sure whether it was the Prabhupada you were talking about or whether it's the Sanskrit text. So I'm thankful of hearing that. Could I have one?
With the Bhagavad Gita, you can read just the Sanskrit verses or just the English or both to be a member of CHAD. It doesn't mean don't read the purports. You should read all the purports. But what happens generally is if you're regularly reading the Bhagavad Gita like that, that you'll become attracted to a verse and you'll say, I have to read the purport to understand this. And you'll go into it deeper. And one of the strategies that is very effective is that if you put the bar low enough so that you feel that, oh, I could do that, then you'll have a tendency to actually go on or attempt something. One of the reasons people don't read the Bhagavatam is they look at it and say, I could never read all that. Well, you can't read it in one sitting unless you're Shukadeva Goswami or Maharaj Pariksit and you got 7 days to live and law of force deficiency. But if you make a plan and put it into tiny little pieces that your mind can say, oh, I could do that, then it's possible. So anyway, verses first, and then you, on other parts of your program, you can read all the purports too. Okay, thank you very much.
I like your points about sitting in your sanctuary and assess the situations and then reinvent yourself. That is something I think very important. Everyone should think, what's happening and what we can do to improve beyond charge of the situation.
Thank you very much. Yeah, just hearing about it again is compelling.
I like the point about hearing an association of like-minded devotees who are more advanced than oneself. I think a lot of times devotees do go home, read their books and everything, which is great. But that extra association of more advanced devotees and diving more deeply into the scriptures through that association is really, really beneficial. And that's a great point. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasizes in his teachings to Sanatan Goswami that the root cause for all advancement in devotional service is association with devotees. Sadhu Sangha is what starts our interest in devotional service, is what sustains our interest, and even when one comes to the goal of devotional service, it's because of and in the association of great devotees. So if there's one thing to think of that is important, it's Sadhu Sangha. It's the kind of association that one keeps. So one prayer that I make often before I chant is, please Krishna, give me the highest, the best association that I can possibly get, and please give me the intelligence to recognize it, and please give me the wherewithal to take full advantage of it when it comes. Because sometimes great association comes my way and I can't lift a finger. It's by Krishna's mercy that I can actually take advantage of good association. This is part of receptivity. There's a way in which there's great association everywhere, but because I'm envious, because I'm busy doing something else, because I'm not prepared to take advantage of it, I don't. And I miss the greatest opportunity to advance in devotional service. Practically, unknowingly, one advances in devotional service by good association. Practically by osmosis. That if you're just in the vicinity and you have the right attitude, just seeing someone who's advanced, you'll be lifted, being in that association. So this is a prime cause for devotional service. Your point's well taken. Thank you. Yes.
Prabhu, thank you for reminding us for the the emphasis on exercising, doing exercise every day. I thought it was very practical. As devotees, we remember the principle that we are not these bodies, but we tend to neglect it and neglect also. So I think it's, it was a good reminder. Thank you.
Did you know that sitting is the new smoking? Sitting is the new smoking. Studies have come out recently that show that one of the most injurious things you can do is sit all day long. And practically, if you sit for too long, that even if you go out and exercise, that it won't make up for it. Because the body, that all the organs of the body get damaged if you sit for too long. So it's important to move around, not sit for long, long periods of time, and get your daily exercise and get the heart moving. It's very important. Yes?
Like you're talking about the reading, you know, like develop the rapt attention for the reading. And as you said, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Krishna. When you read, you feel the presence of Krishna, you know. And then you, once you start reading, chapter after chapter, you develop the taste, you can let it go. So it's very pleasure here.
Thank you. That was beautiful. A personal preference of mine is Krishna book. We read all 90 chapters at Govardhan this year, along with a few other things. It took us several hours a day. We had a quota to keep, I think, which was 40. It turned out to be 40 pages a day to finish all 90 chapters of the Krishna book. We finished in 24 days, reading about 3 hours of Krishna book a day, and then we read the Chaitanya Charitamrita also. But I was thinking how important the book is, Krishna book. It's infused with Prabhupada's deep relationship with Krishna, his realizations, and a perfect balance of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness along with the 10th canto. And he gave it to the world. And there's something that is so profound about hearing Krishna book that even Vyasadeva, who had compiled all the Vedas, became despondent because he felt that he wasn't doing his service right. Something was wrong. Just wasn't feeling himself. And his spiritual master told him, the reason is you didn't tell the 10th canto. You didn't tell the pastimes of Krishna vividly enough and clearly enough for everyone to hear. So this is the essence, the heart of all the hearing process. Culminates in hearing about Krishna leaving Vrindavan and coming into Mathura with his friends. He's got a swagger in his step as he comes into Mathura and he meets the washerman and says, hey, won't you give me some of that cloth? And the washerman said, this is for the king. What are you talking about? You ever talk like that again? The king, I'm going to tell him he's going to come after you. And Krishna karate chops him with his hand, chops his head off nonchalantly, and then tells his friend, here, take all the cloth, let's just try it on. And they go to the tailor and they start making all this clothes and they're walking around like, you know, king of the town. Like there's movies about this, which are reflections. There used to be these movies, probably still are, of, you know, the rough guys come to town and they just sort of like, hey, we own this place, get out of my way. And Krishna, you know, hearing about his pastimes coming in and then the loving relationship he has with the florist, who makes him a garland, offers it to him, and Krishna offers him whatever he wants, and he says, all I want is to have eternal devotional service. And Krishna fighting with the elephant, Kuvalayapida, and the dueling with Mushtika and Chanura, Krishna and Balaram, they come in, they're just boys, and there's these huge wrestlers from, what are that show, the big time wrestling? They were gigantic wrestlers ready to take them on. The whole plan was to kill Krishna and Balaram. It keeps the mind. Everyone wants to hear these stories. They're going to movies. They're going to, but all the stories, all the rasa is there within Krishna's pastimes. Fighting these wrestlers, killing Kamsa. Every day, Prabhupada writing in the Krishna book about how, actually in his commentary in the 10th canto, about these pastimes, he said this was a regular daily function for Krishna to kill demons. And oftentimes it was a punctuation place in their playing, because the boys would play all day long and they wouldn't stop unless there was a demon to kill, and then it would have a time for them to stop, and then they can have their lunch in the forest together. And all these things capture the mind and the heart, and this is the essence of all the teachings, is that one should regularly hear from these. So Krishna book is the concentrated essence of all this. Is that Tara?
Hare Krishna. What really stood out for me is when you mentioned that whatever we hear goes directly in our heart, and based on that, that like our heart directs us in our life. Because sometimes you think, like my mind thinks, oh no, it's okay, like you can do something else besides spiritual, and you always kind of tend to delay. You'd say, oh yeah, I still have time in life, I still can, like, I can read later, or I can do this later.
Yeah, that's an important point. That little voice that says, I'll do it later, I'll do it another time. And to be able to close that gap is a rare thing. You know, it starts with regulation, doing it because you have faith in the doctor. Doctor said, take it every day, so I take it every day. But as one advances, if one can get that taste that I want to do it every day, this is starting to move into the realm of advanced devotional service. And it's altogether possible because there, all the potencies of Krishna are there within his names and his pastimes. And if one goes on regularly hearing them, actually those the sound of the pastimes, which is non-different from Krishna, will overcome the anartas. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks about this in very graphic terms, that each one of the anartas that are in our heart are represented by one of the demons in Vrindavan. And so when Krishna kills the Shakatasura demon, the cart demon, you know, he kicks it with his little lotus foot. He's just a baby, but he's kicking his feet like any baby, but there's this gigantic cart, and it knocks the cart and knocks all these heavy pots and everything. They go scattering all over the place. And there was actually a demon taking shelter within the cart there. And he's annihilated by Krishna's, the touch of his little lotus foot. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes how everyone carries around cartloads of bad habits. We carry like cartloads full of them from previous lives, every sort of bad habit. Why are you doing that? I don't know. Just do. And by hearing Krishna's killing the Shakatasura demon, and by him ending with their heart, those actually can be annihilated. One can become a free soul. Thank you for bringing that up. Thank you. That's the music at the end of the show. So now we have one bhajan. What? Was there one more? What was that? Two more. Yes, please. Thank you.
Prabhuji, you told that all the readers, they must be readers of leaders, but all the readers may not be the leaders, but all the leaders, they must be readers. So if they don't have any, they must be readers, that's true, but if they don't have any consciousness or they read, but you know, if they... They can't lead properly. Is this
reading
proper for them?
If a leader can't lead properly, is it proper?
They read, but they need to read, you know, the consciousness or the towards the Lords or towards the Bhagavad Gita.
That would help, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely would help. I mean, to think of if some of the people who are, for instance, leading some of the big nations of the world actually had a few devotional qualities or even a trace of one devotional quality, how much difference it would make in the world if they were just dedicated to truthfulness. Wouldn't that be such a relief? And what does Krishna talk about in the Bhagavad Gita? All these qualities he's exalting and saying, these are godly qualities. Or he talks in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita about someone who knows how to tolerate all kinds of adversities in life and so forth. This person is very dear to me. So yes, it would be such a relief if some of the leaders in the world actually read and imbibed Bhagavad Gita. we should advocate that. In fact, I think we are. It's actually it's our advocacy. Please read Bhagavad Gita. We want the leaders of the world to read Bhagavad Gita. We think that it'll make a difference in their lives. And therefore, to that end, we go out and we distribute Bhagavad Gita everywhere to every person that we can meet who will listen and will take advantage of it. It's actually what we're trying to do, get people to read Bhagavad Gita. Thank you. Very nice point. One last point? There was one more?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Sorry, I couldn't actually attend the whole lecture, but I just wanted to reflect on one of your emails you have sent. You mentioned that, you know, one should actually avoid visual noise.
Yes.
That actually helped me very, very much, because every day, you know, when you step out of your home, you see so many billboards or ads. But when you actually really think before watching that, is it really helpful to actually take in what you actually see outside?
I'm adding it to the list. Because it's something I learned from a personal organizer. You know, there are people that help you organize your stuff. That's what they dedicate their lives to. And they have all kinds of systems. They're actually really good at it. So one personal organizer once told me, you have stuff in your house, in your living space, that is not necessary. Does that sound familiar? Or is it just me? Ouch! It just comes in from every direction. And then if it's lying around in all directions, after a while you don't even notice it. And to reiterate what Prabhu was saying, it becomes, as she said, this organizer, visual noise. And you don't notice it until you take it away. So one very practical tip is that, you know, every night you should reorganize your living space. And I relate to this because when I was young and I would go on vacation with my parents, sometimes we would get in the car and we'd drive different places for a week or two. And my father would make us, the family, clean the whole house up and down before we leave. And I protested several times. I said, why are we doing this? We're gone. We're not even here. So why clean the house? And he said, you know, it's a good practice, you'll see. And when we came home from vacation 2 weeks later and walked in, the house was all clean. I thought, who did this? What nice person thought of this? And in a similar way, if you, at night, before you go to bed, you clean your room, you clean your house, and you line up all your devotional items consciously the night before. If, for instance, say you're going to do Chad, right? Right? You're going to do Chad? Say you're going to do Chad. That was like, I'm going to do Chad. So you're going to do Chad. So you put your Bhagavad Gita or your chapter that's already printed out. And then what else are you going to do? Name a few of the things you're going to do that you want to do when you wake up. What is it? Japa? So you get your Japa beads and place them neatly on top. What else do you want to do? Bhagavatam, so which Bhagavatam volume? Fifth canto. I say take your fifth canto out, you put it there on the stack. You can even put it in chronological order. Anything else you'd like? It's up to you. You can reorder your life any way you'd like to do. What else would you like to do? Want to learn Sanskrit? Get a Sanskrit book. Put it on the pile. Whatever you want to do, it's up to you. Put it in there. Put it in the mix. Make sure that you're going to do it the next day. If you do that, you clean your space, you line everything up, when you wake up in the morning, and you're not the same person in the morning as you were at night. You go swimming in all kinds of weird oceans when you're sleeping, far, far away. And you wake up in the morning, completely different person, emerge from that deep well of sleep, and you look out and say, who did that? Look at that right there. It's all lined up for me, and the whole house is clean. I really thank the person who did that the night before. And then your consciousness goes right, it continues with the same feeling that you had the night before. But if you wake up to disorder and CNN and everything else that's possible to fill your environment with these days, then you will be sent off on tangents that can end on any number of planets in this universe, and do. So many destinations one can attain by being reckless in the way one uses the particular gift of this human body that's been awarded to us by the lottery. We've won the lottery of material nature. Thank you very much.
Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman.